Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now on to the episode. Hello and welcome to today's episode. So today I wanted to chat about what's actually happening to our hormones as women move past, say, around their late 30s and definitely as they move into their 40s. We're going to dive into what is actually happening in your 40s, aka perimenopause. So kind of like a perimenopause 101. And in my 30s, I felt like I'd mastered everything and everything was going really smoothly and I had really great cycles and easier sort of PMS and periods coming bang on time every month. And then you move into your 40s and it can feel like it throws you this big hormonal curveball and suddenly you're just like, what is going on? I now feel a little bit like I did in my late teens when I was first having my periods, mid to late teens, because it takes a few years, if you remember, you know, when we first started having our periods as a teen, it takes a few years for things to really settle into like what your norm is. And then even into your early 20s, as I said, it can kind of take a while to really settle down as well. So then you move into your 40s and you can kind of feel like you're back there again. So I'll explain why that is and what we sort of put that down to. So there's still, I find, quite a lot of confusion and misunderstandings around what perimenopause actually is, from people thinking that it only applies to women nearer to 50 or, you know, very nearer to reaching menopause itself, or that the entire phase of perimenopause means that estrogen is low. So I've heard people say, oh, my estrogen isn't low yet, you know, I get it tested every so often and it's at normal level, so I can't be perimenopausal. So again, there's this confusion that people think being in perimenopause would mean your estrogen is already now starting to decline, and that's not the case. And the lack of understanding around the many other hormones as well, besides the, you know, so our sex hormones, which are estrogen and progesterone and testosterone, there's this lack of understanding about all of the other hormones that are also changing as a result of moving into our 40s and also therefore impacting us, for example, our thyroid changes. So that's what I hope that this episode can do, just provide you with some clarity and a deeper understanding of what perimenopause actually is and what's actually happening. So let's dive into it. So first of all, let's be clear that perimenopause is not menopause. It's everything that comes before menopause. It's, you know, the word peri is before. It's not the same thing. So that's another area of confusion I find as well. So in the life stage of perimenopause, which can start as early as mid-30s, certain symptoms are likely to come about as lots of other hormones start to chop and change or behave in a way that they weren't behaving before. So that's what's basically going on from around mid-30s upwards. There's this hormonal landscape change, basically, and it's not just sex hormones, it's other hormones as well. It starts usually with a decline in progesterone. So this can be starting late 30s, definitely early 40s or mid. And then it also starts with higher estrogen. So a decline in progesterone and actually higher levels of estradiol specifically than ever before. Or for example, since puberty. So when we first start having our periods as a teen, we can see levels of estrogen go sky high at times in the cycle. And that's what starts to happen again as we move into perimenopause, with declining levels of progesterone. Yes, estradiol starts to get low later, but initially it's actually getting higher, sometimes even three times higher than it ever was in the woman's life before. We're also having erratic stress hormones, so cortisol and adrenaline, for example. A more vulnerable thyroid gland or thyroid hormone output. So thyroid hormone production can slow down, and an increased susceptibility to unstable blood sugar levels and potentially higher insulin levels as well. So the decline in progesterone that perimenopause starts with impacts cortisol, impacts adrenaline, and impacts thyroid hormone as well. And we can become less resilient to stress than we were in the previous decade. So things, for example, that we would do in our 30s, let's say related to exercise, just going to use this as an example because it's quite an easy example to use. In a woman's 30s, she may find that, you know, she's doing certain types of very intense exercise classes, let's say, long length and high intensity. Moving into her 40s, that may not work as well for her body as it did in her 30s, because she has become the hormonal landscape change has now meant that she's less resilient to the same types of stress and levels of stress that she was in her 30s. And this is definitely something that I've experienced and most of my clients experience. And when we just, you know, accept that and start to make some changes, it doesn't mean slowing down and, you know, not being able to do the things you love. It's just going, okay, well, what can I change that to that won't have that same impact, negative impact on me now that it wasn't actually having in my 30s, but it will have now. So let's just look at some of the biochemistry to kind of help you understand this a little bit more. So we have receptors on all our cells in the body. So you can think of receptors basically as like little doors on the surface of our cells that receive a signal, and that signal tells the cell to do something. In our 20s and 30s, the cells of the brain, so brain cells are also known as neurons, the mitochondria, which are basically these power generators inside our cells, and the cells of the energy system that drives our metabolism, are literally bathed in lovely, optimal levels of estrogen and progesterone during the natural calm ebb and flow of estrogen and progesterone across the menstrual cycle. So 20s and 30s really does enjoy this bathing of lovely, good levels of these two hormones. And all of those things I just mentioned, brain cells, the mitochondria, and the cells of our energy system that drives our metabolism, are really enjoying those healthy levels. And then our body is, you know, sort of ticking over in a more optimal way, let's say. So, for example, in our 20s and 30s, and when we're looking at the menstrual cycle, estrogen rises after we finished our bleed, after menstruation, in what's known as the follicular phase, also known as the first half of the cycle. And then that's followed by a robust production of progesterone after we ovulate, which happens around halfway through the cycle. And progesterone then takes center stage of the menstrual cycle during what's known as the luteal phase, which is the also known as the second half of the cycle. And both hormones then taper off a couple of days before our next period is due. So maybe 2 to 3 days before we're due to come on our period, both of those hormones start to get lower. And then the whole dance starts all over again. We come on our period, hormones, both of those hormones are still quite low. And a few days into our period, they start to rise again. So this is the cycle that continues over and over again. And in our 20s and 30s, we can liken it to more like an elegant, controlled waltz on the dance floor. In our 40s, that waltz, that controlled, elegant waltz, can become more of a uncontrolled dance, like a more of a hectic dance where, let's say, the dancer doesn't really know what music it's dancing to. It's just like trying to figure out what's going on and it's not really sure. And that is how things start to change in our 40s. So the gentle roller coaster that I just explained of our 20s and 30s of our menstrual cycle runs on this loop, just repeating itself over and over, month on month, for years. It halts if a woman is pregnant. And it would also halt, just as a side note, if a woman is on the oral contraceptive pill or, for example, the depot injection, because these medications basically block the idea behind them is to block the connection between the brain and the ovary that directs this cycle that I've just talked about. But other than those two things, this gentle menstrual cycle roller coaster is just running on a loop month after month. Then when we hit perimenopause, the nature of this roller coaster changes. So that waltz, that elegant waltz, as I said, starts to change into something else. And it runs in phases or stages. So, for example, the nature of it in the first or the early phases of perimenopause is different from how it becomes in the later stages of perimenopause. So another misconception, as I said at the beginning, is that perimenopause is only the couple of years, let's say, before somebody gets to menopause. It's not. As I've already said, it starts from mid to late 30s, definitely early 40s. So we're in this phase for many years, right? It could be 8 years, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years. And there are stages of it. So the early phase versus the late stage, your cycle are doing very different things, behaving very differently, depending on whether you're in the early stages or the middle or the late stages. So we'll go through that. So essentially, in perimenopause, progesterone is declining and estrogen is, like I said, getting actually higher in the earlier stages and is also fluctuating wildly. It's fluctuating wildly throughout perimenopause, whether your estrogen levels are rising or whether they're declining. It's still always fluctuating wildly. That's one of the characteristics of perimenopause, is fluctuating levels of estrogen as opposed to their more delicate ebb and flow that I just mentioned in your 20s and 30s. So the scale of that fluctuation as well differs depending on what sort of stage of perimenopause that you're in. And this is all governed by the brain and its communication with your ovaries. That is what governs our menstrual cycles. So the hypothalamus in the brain basically senses and takes in all of this information about what's happening in your body and around you. And this information is then passed down to another section of your brain called the pituitary. And that information, so for example, like sending a text message with an instruction to do something, goes down to your ovaries, and that instruction would be ovulate or don't ovulate. If we ovulate, we make progesterone. We make progesterone as a result of ovulating. If we don't ovulate, we don't make progesterone because it's the only way we make it. So then, for example, as well, like the other message that the ovaries get is the brain is telling the ovary, like I said, to release an egg, aka ovulate. And then later on, it also senses that, you know, this person is not pregnant, and then it will tell the ovaries to start the period. And then that cycle just goes on and on and on. And as I said, it would halt if you were pregnant. So a lot of women don't know about perimenopause as well, or they don't think it applies to them because, let's say, they're having regular periods. I hear that as well. Oh, I can't be perimenopausal, I have regular periods. Again, there's different stages. In the early stage, we do still have regular periods. They can change in length, but they can stay regular. Mine have changed in length, but they're still bang on time every month for the length that they are at the moment. But I'm still in perimenopause. Or they think that perimenopause is when periods have gotten fewer and further between. You know, maybe they're thinking that perimenopause would be, as I said, a few years before or a year before menopause, when their periods are like practically non-existent, or like, you know, two or three times a year. But as I said, it starts early, much earlier than we think, and there are stages of it. So at almost 45 now, my periods are still, as I said, very regular, but they've changed from, they were 28 days throughout my 30s. They went down to 27 days. And for, I'd say from maybe around 40, 41, they started to go down to 27 days. And then around 42, they started to go down to 26 days. And they have stayed at 26 days for the last 2 to 3 years. Every so often I come on day 25. So they're getting a little bit shorter sometimes. But for the most part, the next month, they go back to being 26 days. So they are still regular. So in the early to mid stages of perimenopause, you're having regular periods, but you're wondering what's going on with your hormones because you just know that something has shifted. And I definitely resonate with that. So what happens in the gentle roller coaster of your menstrual cycle, it starts to shift by way of losing out on ovulation, and therefore no progesterone is made, or we can still manage to ovulate as many months as we were before in our 30s, but we maybe aren't producing as much progesterone. So I'm one of those people. At nearly 45, I'm still managing to ovulate every month. And the reason I know that is because I take my baseline temperature, body temperature, every morning upon when I wake up. I put the thermometer in my mouth and I just take the reading and I write it down in my cycle tracking app. And every single month, around ovulation day or the day after, basically, my temperature has spiked a little bit. And that temperature spike lasts until the day I come on my period again. That pattern of temperature suggests that I do manage to ovulate around halfway through my cycle and I make progesterone. And as a result, my temperature spikes because that progesterone increases body temperature, and that I've kept that progesterone until my next period comes, which is what we want. That's exactly how we want things to be. But I do think that's really helping me out in a lot of ways in terms of symptom management. But I also know that I'm not making as much progesterone as I used to make because of symptoms that I am having that suggest my progesterone is low. I'm not having the really intense symptoms of no progesterone, but I'm definitely having the subtle symptoms of less progesterone. So some people may be sort of similar age to me, and they're finding that actually they're not, or whether they know or not, they're actually still having regular cycles, but they're not managing to ovulate. So therefore they don't have any progesterone. So their low progesterone symptoms would be more intense than mine because they don't have any at all, no progesterone at all. Whereas I do have some progesterone. So I still have the low progesterone symptoms, but they're just much more subtle because there is still some progesterone there, which is what basically saves me. So hopefully that makes sense. So for me, for example, with the lower levels of progesterone, so some symptoms, typical symptoms of low or no progesterone would be that your PMS is much worse now than it ever was before. You're noticing issues with your sleep. You might be noticing anxiety, irritability, because, and your periods could be heavier as well, because progesterone helps manage all of those things. So this was what, these are the things that I started to experience from around age 41, 42. So this is where I think those ages for me is when progesterone started to get not as the release of progesterone that I made after ovulating was, it started to get less robust than it was in my 30s. And I think it's more or less stayed that way. And I think it's getting less and less robust now that I've moved into being nearly 45. So like my periods are getting heavier, my PMS is getting worse. And for me, PMS means low mood, little bit teary a couple of days before my period, you know, unexplained sadness. I could just be walking down the road and I just want to burst into tears, don't know why. Sleep's a little bit off in the 2 days before my period. It's fine all other times of the month apart from those couple of days. So very clear that that's a kind of progesterone sign, low progesterone issue. More anxiety in the last couple of days before my period as well. So all of these things for me, I just know are due to low progesterone. Even though I do have some, it's just not enough. And I think it's getting lower as the years have gone on. So side note, something that we could talk about in the future is I will probably get to a stage in the next, I don't know, 6 months or maybe more or less, where I will want to speak to somebody about potentially replacing my progesterone with body identical natural progesterone, because I don't want to feel like this. But, you know, I want to get my progesterone levels back up again. So, but we'll talk about that on another episode. So what about estrogen? So what happens to estrogen when the previously gentle roller coaster menstrual cycle shifts as you enter perimenopause is that, as I said, it gets erratic. So it can get, levels of it can get really high initially in the earlier stages of perimenopause, kind of late 30s, early 40s. And then it starts to decline later in the process towards getting closer to menopause. But we get this erratic nature. So as the brain is trying to communicate through sending like little electrical pulses, let's say, from the brain down to the cells around the ovaries, in perimenopause, those pulses just aren't getting received very well or even at all. So sometimes the ovaries do get those pulses, like they're hearing what the brain is saying, or they get those messages too late, and then they respond, like they over-respond because they're trying to overcompensate for the fact that they missed the signals. So it just creates this, you know, kind of breakdown in communication between the brain and the ovaries, which then creates the roller coaster of estrogen. So it goes from its more gentle ebb and flow, where the ovaries were always receiving the messages very loud and clear and doing the right thing at the right time, to then becoming more of a roller coaster because the ovaries are like, whoa, I didn't get that message. Oh, okay, I'll just release loads of estrogen now then, and so on. And then you get this big drop in estrogen, and, you know, so you're on this roller coaster, and that, you know, can create symptoms of like high estrogen 1 minute, low estrogen the next minute. So we get the symptoms of both of those things in the same minute, or, you know, the same sort of day. Or sometimes the cells in the ovaries do get the message, but they just respond too quickly. So it just puts everything on, it puts estrogen on this wildly swinging roller coaster. So at times the roller coaster can be all lower levels of estrogen, and then you can suddenly be put back onto the bigger roller coaster wheel where it's suddenly all really high and then again all really low. You know, if you think of an actual roller coaster, those horrible things in theme parks where you're just like really, really high and then it's just so low, you're almost on the floor, and so on. So that's just, imagine that's what estrogen is doing throughout your month, just so madly fluctuating. And this is how we can start to feel like we are on a roller coaster, an emotional one, a cognitive one, a physical one. So all different kind of aspects of our you know, mental and physical well-being can feel like we're on a roller coaster. We can start to feel like we're just getting messed around big time. And that's how I sort of tend to feel different points in my cycle. I'm like, where is this emotion come from? Like, you know, where is this feeling come from? And I think most of you might be able to resonate with that. So the first shift of the previously normal roller coaster is that we lose progesterone. So we're not as calm. Our sleep might be impacted. We might be feeling anxious. We might have heavier or longer periods. Then the tracks switch again a little bit later, and estrogen goes on this wild, erratic roller coaster. So as an example, this is just a complete example because I don't know the exact ages. Nobody does. Every person's biology is completely different. But as an example, the first thing that usually happens as somebody starts to leave their mid to late 30s is their progesterone levels start to decline, whether it's complete production because they don't ovulate, or they do still manage to ovulate, but the level that they make of progesterone is lower. The next thing, which could be, let's say, as an example, early 40s or on the way to mid 40s, when the tracks switch again, is that estrogen starts going on its wild, erratic roller coaster. So we may just have low progesterone for a few years or more as the only sort of thing that's impacting us. And then, for example, that could be calmness is impacted, sleep is impacted, anxiety, maybe our periods get heavier. And that's kind of it. Whether that's subtle or bigger from person to person, that will differ. Then it could be a few years of that, and then suddenly estrogen now is also going on its wild, erratic roller coaster. So that could be 43, 44, 45, really does depend. I feel that my estrogen roller coaster started about maybe 4 or 5 months ago, and I'm a few months away from 45. So for me, I had the lower progesterone symptoms for about 4 years. Now I think I'm also getting the erratic roller coaster symptoms as well. So, you know, and that's the biology of it. But the good news with when it comes to like nutrition and lifestyle habits is that we can taper all of this. We are, you know, we can't defy biology, but we can help our bodies to deal with this change in hormonal landscape so that the wild, erratic roller coaster doesn't affect us as much, so that the lower progesterone levels doesn't impact us as much symptoms wise. So we can minimize, we can really control our symptoms using various nutrition and lifestyle factors, which is what, you know, my podcast is all about. It's what I do. That's how I help people and myself as well. That's how I help myself. So because the sudden highs and sudden lows of that estrogen roller coaster can bring symptoms of high and low estrogen all at once, all in one day, and exacerbate like PMS and other conditions, like someone, if you already had endometriosis, if you already had fibroids, if you already had very heavy periods, for example, then those kind of conditions and those symptoms will be exacerbated. They'll be really intensified during perimenopause when estrogen levels are much higher. So the earlier phases of perimenopause, when estrogen is getting higher and also erratic, things like endometriosis, fibroids, heavy periods will just be intensified in that phase. So this new estrogen roller coaster can, as I said earlier, can see levels of estrogen rising sometimes 3 times higher than it's ever been before, and then crashing down to really low levels over and over again throughout the month, often causing things like hot flashes as well. So I've never been a hot flash person. I always, my whole life, associated hot flashes with a menopausal woman. But when you are going through this roller coaster and those estrogen levels crash, you can just bring on a hot flash. And again, I'm only starting to notice those in the last, I'd say, 3 months. And they're not all the time. That, you know, they don't last long. I don't get night sweats or anything, but I'm just noticing sometimes I'm like, whoa, I am really hot. I need to get out of here, out of this room or whatever it is I might be in. And I just need to sit outside. And the person next to me is like, I'm not hot at all. And so that's how you kind of know. So the erratic nature of estrogen basically sets the perfect stage for both high and low estrogen symptoms. So let's have a little look at, you know, the typical symptoms of high estrogen are heavy periods, so elevations in estrogen, but also low progesterone, because progesterone is a period lightening hormone, basically. So it could be one or the other or both things. But heavy periods is a big sign of maybe somebody having a domination, where estrogen is like more of the dominant hormone, because they don't have enough progesterone, and or they have genuinely excess levels of estrogen in their body for various reasons. That's a whole other podcast on in itself. So heavy periods, painful periods, breast pain, headaches, bloating, mood swings. These are your typical, there's more as well, but those are the kind of most common high or excess estrogen symptoms. And then the most common low estrogen, so the drops of the roller coaster, are hot flushes, night sweats, headaches, migraines, low mood, flat mood, low energy, fatigue, sadness, sort of teariness, low libido, low motivation, no kind of like zest for your day or zest for your life, brain fog, memory or focus issues, joint aches and pains, vaginal dryness. So some women may hear those and think, well, that's me all the time. So potentially that's a woman who now has genuinely declining levels of estrogen. So maybe they're very close to reaching menopause, or maybe they're just unfortunately at a phase where they're not near menopause, but for whatever reason, they have genuinely low levels of estrogen. If you experience those symptoms all the time in perimenopause, those low levels of estrogen, those symptoms for low levels of estrogen that I just mentioned, are more transient. So, you know, they're just kind of passing through. So for me, the 2 days before my period, when estrogen is usually low for everybody, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, but when you're in your 40s, the low points in the cycle of estrogen can be even lower. So now I'm getting hot flushes a couple of days before my periods for like 48 hours. I'm feeling hot, not necessarily like really, you know, terrible, but I'm just feeling really hot. Whereas in my 20s, although my estrogen was still low before my period, I wasn't really noticing that very much. So the subtlety just changes. So the first most common symptoms we start to experience from declining progesterone in the earlier phases of perimenopause are insomnia or disrupted sleep. So for example, trouble falling asleep or staying asleep or both through the night, heightened anxiety or increased feelings of stress, or just feeling like less resilient to stress, mood swings, irritability. Other symptoms of low progesterone can be shorter menstrual cycles. So mine are getting shorter by a few days. So they were 28, now they're 26. So they're getting shorter by 2 days. They have shortened. I definitely think that's because I still ovulate, but I'm not making as much progesterone. So my cycles are shortening. Heavier menstrual flow, perhaps with flooding and clotting. That's definitely something I experience now. Sore or swollen breasts in the lead up to your period. That's me. Fatigue or low energy. Cyclical headache. So just maybe a couple of days before your period, you might notice a headache. Luckily, I haven't had the headache thing yet. Difficulty concentrating, poor memory, water retention or bloating. So these are other symptoms of low progesterone, and these would be particularly just before your period. So for some women, it might be helpful to discuss, as I mentioned, body identical hormone therapy for progesterone in their 40s, even early 40s. I'm definitely going to be discussing it soon, I would say. I'm going to see how things go over the next sort of 4 to 6 months. But I think if it carries on the way it is, I'm definitely going to look for some help there. So It's also really important, as I said, you know, it's all about addressing nutrition and lifestyle factors that support the body to ovulate. Because yes, a characteristic of perimenopause is that we start to ovulate less and less. That's just, as I said, biology. In our 40s, we will ovulate less than we did in our 20s and 30s. But we can support the body to ovulate more months than it would have done if we didn't intervene. That's the beauty of working with nutrition and lifestyle habits, because if we just know the things that are going to make it even harder for the body to ovulate, let alone the fact that we're in perimenopause, then we can change those things and give our body more of a chance than it would have had if we didn't intervene. So that's where the power comes in. And that's what I live, breathe and teach, you know. So we'll get into that in a future episode. I'll have a whole episode just talking about progesterone production, ovulation support. Unopposed estrogen is another situation that arises during perimenopause. This is also sometimes called estrogen dominance. Both terms kind of mean the same thing. A lot of hormone specialists these days don't really like the term estrogen dominance. They're like, well, people shouldn't be using that. But it does explain the situation. So I still sometimes say estrogen dominance. But what we're basically talking about is a situation that occurs when estrogen isn't balanced out or opposed by its partner hormone, progesterone. So hence why it would be called a situation of unopposed estrogen. And what that essentially means is if we haven't made progesterone that month because we didn't ovulate, or we did make progesterone, but just not much, we'll have a situation where estrogen is left unopposed by its partner. And we have this situation, and it's dominant. That means it dominates the cycle when it shouldn't dominate the cycle. Estrogen should be dominating in the first half of the cycle, but not the second half. But if we don't make enough progesterone or any for that second half, we have a dominating hormone, which is estrogen. So progesterone is the calming yin to estrogen's yang, if you like. As progesterone levels are on the decline, as we're ovulating less and less, or just not producing as much as we would have before, estrogen is now not only potentially high in the early stages of perimenopause, where we've got these higher levels, but and erratic, but now is also unopposed by its partner calming best friend hormone, progesterone. Symptoms of perimenopause, the typical kind of perimenopause symptoms that result from unopposed estrogen are heavy periods, painful periods, breast pain, headaches, bloating, mood swings, new or worse PMS. So you can see, you know, there's a bunch of symptoms here that I'm talking about, and they all kind of overlap. And we can say, oh, that's because of this and that's because of this. We don't really know exactly what's causing it. We just know that it's going to be a mix of low progesterone, no progesterone, unopposed estrogen, excess estrogen, low estrogen. You know, it's a mixture of all of those things that are going on during perimenopause. And all of these symptoms overlap and impact each other. So it can sound like one big mess, and it can be, it can feel like that, but it also doesn't have to be. We can support our bodies to deal with this a lot better and minimize it all. So now that we've discussed what's happening in perimenopause with regard to your hormones, what we can say is that perimenopause is essentially hormone imbalance, you know? And whilst before we get to perimenopause, you know, 20s and 30s, we can be really focused on addressing hormonal imbalance. And you'll hear like other kind of health practitioners saying, you know, I help people deal with hormone imbalance. When we get to perimenopause, that's what perimenopause is. It's a hormone imbalance. And as I said, biologically, we can't change that, but we can manage it. We can minimize its impact. We can minimize the imbalance, but we can't stop it or change it because it's natural. That's what's going on. So just like puberty, when you first started having your periods, your hormones and, you know, essentially your cycles and your periods, they were all over the place. I know mine were. Whilst your body and your brain are starting to adapt to this new phase of life, and your ovaries are now making significant levels of these two hormones that your body didn't have up until this point. And it's like, whoa, what is going on? And the brain and ovary communication is new. They're just getting to know each other. So, you know, it can feel like your periods are irregular. They can be super, super heavy. They can be your period pain, the cramp, you know, leading up to your period and the first day of your period. I remember being at school and just wanting to curl up into a ball in the corner of the playground at secondary school and just go home. Like, it's really, really horrible in the first could be anywhere from like 1 year to a few years during puberty. And this is why you hear some perimenopause experts say that perimenopause is like puberty in reverse. And it is basically just that. Now we get into a point where it's the other way around. Your brain and ovary communication is now starting to change again. So in your 20s and 30s, it was used to it. It was the brain and ovaries were chatting to each other really well. And now that's changing again, but the other way round. While the body starts its very slow and gradual transition towards stopping having periods. So it's the other way round of puberty, puberty in reverse. Now, you know, after a couple of decades or so of menstruating and making progesterone and estrogen in a specific cycle, a gentle ebb and flow every month, the brain and ovary connection is winding down. It's changing on its way to you eventually going 12 full months without having a period. And that's when you've reached menopause. So my aim for this podcast is to help you understand how you can support your body with all of these changes and really minimize its impact, because it can be a much smoother journey. And so essentially when we've gone 12 consecutive months without having a period, we're now at menopause for one day. So on the 13th month of now, I haven't had periods for 12 months. I'm on the 13th month. You're now postmenopausal. The roller coaster is now completely flattened. There's no more swings. You just have low hormones. It's all flatlined. There's no more periods. So before, your periods usually get shorter, your cycles, sorry, usually get shorter for a while, then they get longer, further and fewer between. And then you'll have some skip cycles until you do eventually get, you know, it could be 6 months with no cycle and then you get a period, and then it could be 8 months, and then you're waiting to go 12 months without having one. So that process can basically occur over a span of about 8 to 12 years. So that's what I really wanted to sort of spell out in this podcast episode. So just note as well, just as kind of side note, that after, so post, when you're postmenopausal, which is for the rest of your life after that 13th month, your ovaries still do make some very small amounts of estrogen, progesterone and testosterone. But very, very small amounts. Nothing like the, let's say, be honest and say, the therapeutic levels of progesterone and estrogen that we had in our 20s, 30s and earlier 40s. We're now, you know, post-menopause, we're just not making those therapeutic levels anymore. Also, as testosterone floats around in your system, it's what's known as aromatized into estrogen. So that's another way we can make a bit of estrogen after post-menopause, but it's still a much tinier dose. And another side note is that brain health and our kind of the health of the cells in the body is really important, seeing as this whole thing is controlled by the brain sending signals out to the cells around the ovaries to receive and act upon. So we also need to consider when we're going through perimenopause and we have, like, you know, terrible symptoms, for example, we need to consider things like previous head trauma or traumatic brain injuries. How somebody, you know, that sounds quite scary, but it's just something to consider. Like, I mean, I've had head trauma when I was 15. That's another podcast in itself. But yeah, I have very bad head trauma. And I was unconscious for quite some time. When I say quite some time, I mean a few hours, not like a long time. I wasn't in a coma. But that will still impact, you know, when I get headaches, they're pretty horrible because of that. So I really am trying to do everything I can to minimize the headache part for me, because I don't want to get headaches. So yeah, aside from the scary thing of head trauma, we also want to look at your sleep. You know, if you aren't sleeping well, your brain health is going to be, you know, not as optimal. If anyone has any sleep apnea, something to look out for and solve, you know, speak to a sleep specialist if that's you, have one of those sleep studies done. Good blood flow. You know, we want to be moving. We want to make sure we do have our blood pumping around the body often throughout the day. If we are somebody with tense neck and shoulder muscles, you know, that can be blocking a lot of the blood flow as well. We want to look at oxygenation to the brain. How are we breathing? So that's about how we breathe, basically. If you're a shallow breather or a mouth breather versus a slower nose breather. So breathing through your nose is what we want to basically be doing most of the time. All of this stuff matters. But again, this is for another episode of its own. also things like environmental toxins, drugs, alcohol, you know, prescription drugs, recreational drugs, all of these things impact the way the brain functions and therefore our experience of the symptoms of perimenopause. And, you know, how is, when we talk about cells, the cellular health, we're talking about as well, are you eating enough good fats to support the fatty membrane, the outer layer that surrounds our cells? Are we keeping that in good integrity? So we need lots of omega-3 fats from fish oil, for example, oily fish. Are we getting enough nutrients from our meals? All of this plays a role in how we do or don't make hormones and how much of them we make and how well we make them, how well we ovulate. Because if the body gets the feedback message from the brain saying now isn't a good time to make this hormone, now isn't a good time, you know, to ovulate or to whatever hormone it might be, because, for example, all of these things I've just mentioned, they're physiological stressors. So we've got external stressors, but we've also got internally made stressors. Then that hormone won't be made, whether that's thyroid, whether it's progesterone, whether it's estrogen. So this is why the foundational work for a good perimenopause experience is sleep health, gut health, thyroid health, good nutrition, stress management, supportive supplements where necessary, good exercise routine and habits, supporting autoimmune conditions, managing inflammation, addressing any issues like mold toxicity or gut parasites. All of these things are the foundational work of a good, you know, having a good time during perimenopause and rocking up to menopause happy. Now, the decline in progesterone, as well as more anxiety and sleep issues, that can also result in lower immunity. So progesterone is very helpful for immune health and also for thyroid health. So, for example, if we do have pre-existing autoimmune conditions like rheumatoid arthritis or Hashimoto's, which is the thyroid autoimmunity, then the lower, this decline in progesterone can now start to flare symptoms of these things. So I hear a lot of women in their early 40s say that they're suddenly experiencing flares of their rheumatoid arthritis, for example. And they don't know, you know, haven't done anything differently. Why am I suddenly experiencing it worse? And it can be because of this decline in progesterone that's impacting their immune system. But what's important to know is that the more areas of imbalance in our health as well, such as like if we do already have thyroid issues, whether it's the autoimmune version, which is Hashimoto's, or whether we have an underactive or overactive thyroid, whether we have blood sugar dysregulation already that we probably don't know about, high stress, chronic stress, any imbalances in the gut, again, whether we know or don't know, chronic infections, whether we know or we don't, other factors that, you know, create chronic low-grade inflammation in the bodies, like diet as well, various foods and drinks can create inflammation, the more likely we are to feel symptoms. They're going to be more intensified. And that's basically this, in a way, this is good because we can see our 40s as a window of opportunity. It's like, this is the time to really look at everything with a fine tooth comb and say, right, okay, is the way that I've been living up to now going to see me in good stead throughout my 40s and into menopause? Possibly not. I need to start making some changes. So in fact, you know, really from 30s upwards, we want to be making health a priority in terms of looking at nutrition and lifestyle habits. But from 40, it really does become an absolute must. And this, the way that we can adopt the mindset that our experience of perimenopause is within our control. So that's how we want to see this. We want to say this is okay, we're moving into this phase of perimenopause that we've heard so much awful things about online, but actually we can control our experience of it. You have the power to minimize your symptoms and to make them go away completely, as long as you know what your body needs in order to support against the rocky hormonal ride. You can minimize, you know, really manage symptoms much better than somebody who doesn't do those things. And that's what's really great. It doesn't have to be a phase to dread or to hate. After all, as I said, it is a natural phase of our amazing womanhood, and we do owe it to ourselves to know what's happening and know how to support ourselves. I can't emphasize enough how impactful nutrition and lifestyle habits are on your entire perimenopause experience. They can improve the severity or intensity of symptoms tenfold if you know how to leverage them. And in a nutshell, we can leverage nutrition and lifestyle habits and, you know, improve our health to calm the estrogen roller coaster as much as possible, shelter our body and our nervous system from these sharp highs and lows. Even though they're going to happen, we can calm it, we can shelter the body from it being so intense. we can support our body to ovulate more months than it would have done without intervening. So you can then make more progesterone more often than it would have, than you would have before. So we can, although these things are biologically what's happening naturally, we can help to manage them. So that is what I, as I said, I live and breathe every day. And that's exactly what this entire podcast is all about. So I hope this second episode has been helpful, just to give you this overview of perimenopause and well, more than an overview, I hope. I hope it's helped dive a little bit deeper. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.